And welcome back to Rosie on the House. And they really did it. Everybody left me. And we've got Dr. Sky on the phone. And I don't even know how to bring him into the broadcast. Do you know how to bring him, Gary?
Good morning.
Hey, man. They've left me all alone in the studio. This is hilarious. How are you this morning?
I'm doing good, brother. I'm here at the Sedona Rouge in Sedona. 52 degrees. Couldn't be better. Happy. How are you?
Hey, what has you up in Sedona?
Doing a Dr. Sky program last night. We do them every month up here at Sedona Rouge. Beautiful resort. And couldn't ask for better weather there, Rosie. Beautiful.
And so what is a Dr. Sky event at Sedona?
Well, we have dinner at a beautiful restaurant called Red's. And then after that, it's on to the roof from about 9 o'clock to whenever the people want to leave. And I bring the telescopes, the lasers, and this is the heavenly place to watch the sky. You know that.
Wow.
That's awesome.
How does someone book a spot on that event?
Well, you just call the Sedona Rouge. I don't have their number right in front of me, but you just give them a call. And the next time we're doing this will be on October 19th, a Thursday. I'll be back here.
Well, and we were having a little birthday celebration at our office yesterday at lunchtime, and one of the staff looked at me and says, "Why haven't you ever taken the staff on Dr. Sky's Canyon Lake tour?"
And hey, so there you go.
So I think we're bringing the entire staff and family. So
let's do one of those again. That'll be fun.
It is. That's a great trip as well. Out on the Canyon Lake, Dr. Sky takes you. You have dinner out on the boat, and he's got these lasers pointing up into the sky, and he just kind of talks through whatever it is that you can see out there. Actually, when we did it the last time, we actually saw some bighorn sheep up on the side of Canyon Lake. It was
absolutely
great.
It's absolutely beautiful.
Well, I told people, you know, there's a lot of things going on in the sky right now, and that's why I wanted to bring you on. Of course, we've got the equinox, which is kind of dependable and you can count on it, and very regular. But there's a lot of other things going on up there right now.
Well, Rosie, it's amazing. You know, happy fall to everybody. And when I tell people it's 52 degrees in Sedona, it's equally, you know, comparably cooler, obviously, in the Valley of the Sun there. But this is probably one of the best times of the year. And people know this who lived here. But if you're listening and you're a newcomer to Arizona, you know, Rosie, so many wonderful things are happening. But sky-wise, we get to see some really amazing events coming up here because that summer monsoon, love it or not, is now pretty much over, so that the skies now, when the moon is just now a thin crescent in the evening sky, it's still time to really get out. And even if you live in the city, you can still see some very interesting things. We have planets in the sky. We have Jupiter hugging the horizon just after sunset. Saturn, pretty much due south. That's the planet where the Cassini spacecraft just burned up in the atmosphere after doing so much great research. And then in the morning sky, Rosie, we wake up to, just as people were watching before showtime here, you get to see the beauty of Venus and the dark skies of Arizona is what I'm saying, and the clear skies. What a great time of the year to watch the sky.
That Cassini that just crashed into Saturn here within the last couple weeks, that had been working for NASA for a couple decades, right?
Well, pretty much about 12 to 13 years,
wow,
to be more precise. But
okay,
the specifics on it are interesting. Here's a spacecraft that had some nuclear propulsion on it. You know, it had some of those particular people out there that didn't want to see a nuclear-powered spacecraft at launch because it could have exploded on the ground. Well, those naysayers were proved wrong. But that particular spacecraft, well over a decade, produced millions of images of the planet Saturn. And it revealed something interesting, too, that there are tiny little shepherd moons that hang out inside the little gaps of the rings of Saturn. And they actually, thus their name, shepherd satellites, they herd some of the material just to make it as if they're like little street sweepers out there. So Saturn is just an incredible planet, but the spacecraft was intentionally burned up, Rosie, so that if indeed that spacecraft had any surviving Earth bacteria on it, microbes, that they would never contaminate any of the surface of any of those smaller satellites. This time it burned up completely in the heavy gravity of the planet Saturn. An interesting spacecraft that we should salute. So when you look south and you look up and see the planet Saturn, know that the light takes 84 minutes just to get from Saturn to your eye and back and forth. So Long Live Cassini, a great project from the good folks at the JPL.
Was that vehicle capable of capturing images just like right up until the point of incineration?
It sure did. And I don't have the exact altitude above the ring system or above the planet itself. But yes, it continued to operate like any normal spacecraft would until the heat of the Saturnian atmosphere actually started to rub up against the spacecraft, and the gravity and friction forces literally ripped it apart. So it is actually, there are some images, and I've seen some. I don't know how close to the actual zero moment, but yes, the spacecraft did function all the way down until it destructed, and then incinerated into Saturn's atmosphere.
And I have to tell you, folks, if y'all haven't been on the website to take a look at some of the images this Cassini took of Saturn, it is, we were talking about the eye never being satisfied driving through Arizona, view after view after view, particularly when you can drive through the mountains and appreciate and soak in the fall colors. But these images of Saturn are just jaw-dropping wonder.
They are, Rosie. And if you look at the top of Saturn near the pole, still scientists and meteorologists have a hard time understanding. We talk about, obviously, the sad devastation, and our thoughts and prayers go out to all those affected by these horrific Earth-based hurricanes. But on Saturn, you have this monstrous hexagonal-shaped hurricane that continues to move, not like Jupiter's red spot, but continues to form weather. But remember, the size of these planets is just incredible. Like Jupiter, 12 times the diameter of the Earth. Saturn, Rosie, if you take ring edge to ring edge, it's actually larger than Jupiter. But horrific storms, and we're trying to understand what are the dynamics by objects that are that far away from the sun? How does weather work even out there, and how can it be so intense? So there's a good correlation here. Your tax dollars, I think, in my opinion, are being well spent in understanding weather systems. Hopefully we can understand what happens here on the Earth better, too.
Well, in our staff meeting yesterday, someone said, well, Rosie, haven't you heard? You're not going to have a show tomorrow. It's the rapture. and somebody's predicting the rapture today based on some constellation alignments. What's that about?
Well, Rosie, let me say this. I try to tend to be more scientific, but you know, let me put it this way. I'll run from that one like the plague, because
no rapture in Yavapai, Coconino County yet, right?
Not that I can tell. Okay. And we've heard this so many times before, but let's put it this way. With all the pain and suffering that these hurricanes have inflicted, sad as it is, obviously there's no science behind what I'm telling people up there from my perspective. We've heard this time and time again, though I must respect biblical prophecy. Let me say that very clearly. But in this particular case, it looks like, Rosie, you'll have a show, and hopefully we'll be able to do this for a long time to come.
Well, there's something in biblical prophecy that says no man knows.
Exactly. That is also true.
But everybody,
you never know, so never take anything for granted. But, Rosie, there are just so many things. And I wanted to remind the listeners, too, we kick off, I should have mentioned this earlier, we kick off our Dr. Sky observing season. The program's at the Lost Dutchman State Park. Saturday, folks, jot it down, October the 14th at 7 p.m.
Nice.
I donate all the money to the park. There's a $7 per car fee, but all that money goes to the dedication of the park. And finally, you mentioned Dolly Steamboat. We do another one on Saturday, October the 28th. So if you want to get to see, if you're a newcomer to Arizona, or like myself, if you've been here 30-plus years, well, folks, the Saturday night, October the 28th, give them a call. Book the Dr. Sky Cruise to the Cosmos. Obviously, the reason, the weather should be spectacular, as we know, toward the Halloween time. And there's just so many wonderful things going on, not only above our heads, but around us. And, Rosie, the sun has been acting extremely, off scale. Last month, after the total solar eclipse up in Idaho that we went to, the sun blew out this gigantic solar flare from a solar region, an active region called AR2673. What does that mean? It means that that sunspot group is projected to actually come back around the side of the sun in a few days on the left edge of the sun, and the havoc in solar storms and X flares may start once again. How about that?
So what will that do here? How will we experience that here?
Hopefully not much at all, but what happened in the early part of this month? This particular sunspot group, literally, and I watch the sun mostly every day with the solar telescope that I have. What is that? It peers into the sun. I can create an eclipse of the sun every day and I can see what's on the edge of the sun, those big prominences like the red stuff that you saw in the eclipse photographs on the edge. But when the sunspot group came around, it was just two small little pores, they call them, on the sun. And in 2 days, Rosie, it expanded to the size of maybe nearly that of like Uranus or Neptune, gigantic. And these twisting of these magnetic fields caused these flares. So the simple answer to this, here at the on the Earth, here in Arizona, not much in direct effect, but for the polar regions, get all this energy absorbed, and they light up the auroras, and they cause a lot of high-frequency radio communications to black out, like they use them on aircraft. So the least of our problems, of course, would be seeing the beautiful auroras. But remember, back in 1859, at least as the astronomers reported, I call that the Victorian Internet. Of course, they had no Internet like we do. They used telegraph. That's the Victorian Internet. Telephone lines actually went on fire. And in those days, they saw the auroras in 1859 all the way down to the equator. So if we had another one of those type of mega flares, I'm sure that with all of our high technology, which would now be reduced to low technology, let us hope and pray that we never have an event like this thing called the Carrington event of 1859. But not much that you would notice, folks, here, let's say in Arizona, walking around with your phone. But that doesn't mean that some of these events couldn't be induced into power transformers like they were in great flares in 1989 in Canada. They lost part of the whole power grid. So we just have to keep our eyes to the skies to be able to hopefully try to watch these things. And how can you protect yourself? That's a tough one. Not much you can do.
The awesome power of creation.
Yes. Isn't that amazing? To be respected, obviously.
Golly. And on that theme, so you and I both feel like we're probably not going to be raptured today.
No.
But you were telling me on the phone when we were talking earlier in the week that there is an event coming that's pretty significant with a star heading into our solar system, three quarters the size of the sun, that's going to wreak havoc with our existence.
Yes, absolutely, Roseanne. People know, of course, of the two extinction events. One of them at Chicxulub 65 million years ago, when an asteroid allegedly smashed into the area we call the Gulf of Mexico, and it happened 65 million years before that. But here's something interesting, and not to worry, it goes along with the non-rapture event today.
That's why I thought we'd tie it together.
Right, 1.3 million years, so don't drop your coffee just yet and run out of the house. But on a serious note, this is a star that's about three-quarters the size of the sun. It's called Gliese 710. Remember that. Gliese 710. It's one of the only stars that astronomers believe will actually invade the outer solar system and come within, get a load of this, 77 light days. We usually talk in light years. 77 light days is about 430 times the distance of Neptune. But why is this significant? Around the solar system, we know this for a fact, there's a large cloud of comets called the Oort cloud. And what this is allegedly going to do then, and I know, don't drop your coffee just yet, it's 1.3 million years in the future, it will unleash hell by unleashing comets, which are the highest projectile speed objects that the solar system has. The largest of these objects makes meteors look like they're tiny, or asteroids. But this will unleash a comet storm toward the inner solar system, and that's not good, because now, excuse me, it'll be like a gigantic shotgun blast happening in the solar system as this gravity of this star just literally mixes up all that dormant material outside there. So astronomers have been studying this, and good that they are, because so many people wonder what would happen if a star came very close to the sun. So it's a good exercise and understand on the computer.
Wow.
What might happen, but it's not good for the future. 1.3 million years into the future with cometary storms from Gliese 710.
Find something else to worry about. Dr. Sky, can you hang on for a couple minutes?
I would love to.
Great. We're going to be back with Dr. Sky here at Rosie on the House.